Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's weekly wrap-up. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on our conversation, of course, you can hit us up in our chat room. We'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. A lot to talk about, folks. Big news with Ring of Honor, some news with AEW, some news concerning Bray Wyatt. We want to start with a little bit of bad news, hopefully not too bad of news. Hacksaw Jim Duggan undergoing surgery for prostate cancer. Our thoughts and prayers are with him, obviously, for a speedy recovery. And we'll keep you updated on his condition. Now, Ring of Honor, folks, made real big news this week because they literally released every single one of their talent pool. Every single person who was under contract has been released, and Ring of Honor issued a statement saying we are going to be reimagining our product. Now, from everything that I've heard, they plan on doing a show in December, and then they're going to take the first half of next year off, first quarter of next year off, and they're supposedly going to revamp the product into something different. From what I'm hearing, it could be for sale. I'm also hearing that they don't want to do any long-term contracts anymore. They just want to do a per-appearance-based type federation like much of the indies do. This is a problem when you consider that Ring of Honor was the federation everyone was most happy with how they handled the COVID situation. And I told you at the time, Ring of Honor, this was a very nice thing they were doing, paying people, not releasing anyone while Vince McMahon was releasing people, other companies were releasing people. They were not doing that. They were steadily paying their employees, but I told you what was going to happen. I told you at the end of the day, this is a business and you can't pay people when your business isn't open. And now this has been proven correct. They could not stay in business. They could not stay in business because rather than to follow that pattern and say, we're not having shows, we can't pay people, they chose to take the high road. You can say what you want, whether it's morally correct or it isn't, but business-wise, it's not correct. And now instead of people maybe having the inconvenience of not having a job for a few months or even 6 to 8 months or a year, they don't have a job at all, and Ring of Honor is virtually folded. And Ring of Honor, as you know it, is not going to be the same. Because here's the problem. If you want to be a competitive federation, you have to have people under contract. And the reason you have to have people under contract is, who are you going to have to be a champion? Somebody who 2 weeks from now, AEW or WWE or somebody else is going to steal? How can you do that? How can you plan any long-term booking? Oh, we're going to have this long-term feud. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And then that's going to culminate 3 months from now into this. You can't. You don't even know those guys are going to be there in 3 months. There's a very good chance they're going to have a better offer or something else is going to happen. And they're going to say, hey, sorry. This was always the problem with indie feds. Indie feds could never really book long-term, because they never knew which guys they were getting back or which guys were going to move on or which guys were going to find a better offer. If Ring of Honor becomes that, Ring of Honor is no longer competitive. And there are many people saying, well, you see, this was the unexpected offshoot. AEW was bragging about trying to run WWE under. They really ran Ring of Honor under. That's not true. It's not really true. It was the pandemic that ran Ring of Honor under, because Ring of Honor made a choice. And whether you think that's the moral choice or not, and I'm not arguing it was a great gesture on their part, but business-wise, it made no sense. Think of your own business, whatever you do for a living. if that place had to shut down for a year and said, we're still going to pay you, how long can they stay in business? Not very long. So unfortunately, this looks like it's the end of Ring of Honor as we know it. This is a place that many, many, many top stars, today's top stars, came out of. This was a real breeding ground for top, top talent. And it's a shame to see it go. This is probably the first victim of the pandemic. And we had said during the pandemic, we had said it's going to be in the small federations. They're the ones that's going to suffer. The tiny, tiny federations won't suffer very much because they'll just go under and they'll rebrand themselves when the COVID thing is over. They don't have any contracts that they have to worry about. They don't have anything like that. Places like Ring of Honor, they had contracts to worry about. And they could not keep them. So we'll see what happens. They're having that one final show, and then they say they're going to reimagine what Ring of Honor is. I fear that the reimagining is basically that you're going to see some top indie stars come in there for a cup of coffee, but you know, long term, you know, they're saying they're not really looking to sign anybody to a long term contract or even to a contract. Preferring instead to do appearance by appearance basis. Well, that's going to leave you with guys that nobody wants. Let's be perfectly reasonable. Or people who are on the rebound saying, well, I can come here and I can do a show, but then I'm doing another show for somebody else. It's never going to feel like you have a roster. It's always going to feel like you're just putting on a talent show. Well, we managed to get this person. We managed to get that person. At this stage of the game, Ring of Honor is no bigger than NEW. For the people who don't know what NEW is, it's Northeast Wrestling. And Northeast Wrestling pretty much does the same thing. And they put on some good shows. Some very, very good shows. But they don't have a lot of people who's exclusive to their brand. So really, it's a catch-as-catch-can. It's, oh, this guy's appearing this week. Oh, that's great. Oh, this person's going to be there this next month. That's great. But it's never a continuing saga. It's not really something you can plan long-term. So it's just like a highlight show. This week we may have this guy. A month from now we may have these guys. Guess who we're having for our big event in, you know, the summertime. We've managed to get one or two top names. That's all it's going to be. And you've lost something with Ring of Honor because, again, this was a breeding ground that how many people came out of there? A lot. And the chances of that happening now, well, I mean, it could still happen, but it's going to be slim. So, Mike, a lot of people called us heartless when we said you can't continue to pay these people under contract. They're not working. You're going to have to either release them or freeze the contracts or do something. Otherwise, you are just bleeding your money pool dry, and eventually it's not going to be able to sustain itself, and you're going to go under. And unfortunately, it looks like we were right.
Yeah, it looks like we were right. And think about this. Sinclair Media, which is the parent company for ROH, you know, they just made this decision, you know, and this decision is probably a bad decision. But look, Mike Bennett just got back there, you know, they just re-signed him. You know, they just brought him back to be with the Kingdom or whatever they call themselves now. Right. And now he's gone. He's gone, so is all these guys. And no wonder when Leo Rush left, he didn't go back to ROH. No wonder, because he probably could, at the time when he left, he probably could see the writing on the wall. Now, we know where he is. He's over there in AEW, but that's the point. He could see the writing on the wall with ROH. He was one of the guys that came from Ring of Honor, right? Leo Rush.
Yeah, but I mean, Seth Rollins, right? AJ Styles was over there. So many people were over there. My God, it's a litany list of people. Yeah, listen, EC3 had just made it over there after. I guess maybe he'll try to get back to Impact. I don't know what's going to happen to some of these people. I've heard that there's rumors that Tony Khan is jumping to sign all of these people. I got to tell you something. Tony Khan has to watch himself. If you're going to sign 14 of these people from Ring of Honor, you have no television time for them. Everyone's going to get lost in the shuffle. And we're going to get to AEW in a minute because I'm going to explain to you how people are starting to get lost in the shuffle here and how things are getting a little ugly. But first, Todd, Ring of Honor, I mean, this was the federation that for a while fans had said was going to continually grow, get stronger, and basically do what AEW was hoping to do. And now apparently they're finished.
You're absolutely right there, like you said about the Ring of Honor guys. And but there's a couple guys who just won the tag belts. Was it the Young Briscoe Boys who just won their tag team belts a week or so ago. Now they're not – I don't know what's going to happen with the championship belts they have.
I don't know because everybody's been released. So I guess, you know, everything's vacated. That's – obviously the way it's going to have to be. So hopefully they can bounce back. Hopefully they can figure out something, but it's not looking good. Now, since we talked about AEW, let's talk a little bit about what's going on. There's rumors that Tony Khan is looking to sign several of these guys, if not more than several. And this is probably a bad time for it. You know, Tony Khan had put his foot in his mouth a couple of weeks ago and said, well, when WWE SmackDown goes head-to-head with us for that half hour, we're going to beat their main show. Well, they didn't beat their main show. They didn't come close to beating their main show. And you can take that small demographic and say, well, they beat them in this particular demographic, but throw that out the window. They didn't beat them. And worse than that, SmackDown's rerun, which aired on a Saturday, it was the exact same show as Friday, and they aired it on Saturday because they had nothing else to run, actually beat AEW. The rerun of SmackDown that had already aired the night before beat AEW on Saturday night by a decent margin. And now you add that to the fact that at the recent TV tapings, there were people writing and tweeting saying tons of people are walking out of this show before it's over. Started out full, and by the time the end of the TV tapings was coming, it's a half full. Now, there's a reason for that, and that is that the way AEW does their TV tapings, and because they want to start out, their philosophy is start out with a top match or whatever, they don't really end with them sometimes. A lot of people said, well, this is the match I came to see, I'm leaving. It's a five-hour TV taping, really, because they're taping for Rampage, and they're taping for Dynamite, and they're taping it all. So it was a very long TV taping, and some people said, I've had enough. I've seen the matches I want to see. Going forward, there's going to be a problem for AEW. They're going to have to figure it out. They don't want to do separate Rampage tapings and Dynamite tapings. They want to do them all at the same time. That's fine, but if you're going to run a four-plus-hour show, you got to give the fans something to stick around for. Now, what the WWE used to do, because I attended their tapings. And I attended their tapings at a time when it was very, very tough to sit through. And the reason it was very tough to sit through is 90% of the matches were squash matches. That was at an era where literally you would have a guy like Bad News Brown or Demolition, they'd come out five times because they were taping for the whole month. And they'd beat nobodies and nobodies and nobodies and be like, wow. But at the end, they would keep informing you, stick around till the end of the TV tapings because we're going to have this match. And it was a major match. It would be a match that you definitely said, well, I'm not leaving until I see that, even if it's not airing. And it didn't air. The cameras were not rolling when that match happened. It was a dark match. But it would be something really good, something that you're like, well, okay, I have to see this. AEW is going to have to start doing that because they can't start with a full audience. And then, because here's what it's going to look like. Because they're taping it all in one night, it's going to look like one of their shows doesn't have too much attendance. In other words, if it was all aired and actually broadcast in one night, you'd just say, okay, well, some fans are leaving. It's a long show. You see that on pay-per-views and things. But that's not the way they're going to air it. They're going to break it up. So one of these TV tapings, you're going to look in the audience and be like, oh, this place is full. But a lot of people left because you're going on the fifth hour. People got to go to work. They got to get up in the morning. Some of these people got to travel a couple of, maybe 50, 60 more or more miles to get home. So it's going to be a problem going forward with AEW, Mike. You have to figure out how to do these TV tapings in a way where half the audience doesn't walk out.
Right. And that was, look, back in the 80s and 90s, well, more like the 80s, that was the general fare for these wrestling companies. I mean, I remember many times when Mid-South UWF would come down and they'd say, okay, we're going to hold a television taping at this arena. You go to the arena and it's like a 5 to 6 hour thing. Well, it was, they were taping 1 hour, one hour things, but it would be a 5 or 6 hour thing, and they do the same thing. You see, you know, the Blade Runners come out 3 or 4 times or whatever. Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Hacksaw Butch Reed, Junkyard Dog. Well, maybe not Junkyard Dog, but you know, those guys, Ted DiBiase, Dr. Death, Steve Williams, come out 5 or 6 times. You know, in the course of the five to six hours, you know, of tapings. So yeah, you're right. They're gonna have to do that, and it's gonna be interesting to see how you know, this guy Cody Rhodes is gonna be under the gun. It's not Tony Khan. Tony Khan has nothing to do with putting these things together. You know, he's the money man behind the thing. It's Cody Rhodes who's putting the shows together, who's putting the talent together, who's producing AEW, you know, for the most part. Him and, you know, guys like, you know, the two former horsemen and others that are putting these shows together. That's going to be who's going to be on the pressure is going to be on those guys to find ways to do this. You know?
Yeah, look, the deal with these TV tapings, and the reason the WWE's wasn't so egregious is because the WWE had a totally different style of wrestling. In other words, you say, oh my God, here comes Bad News Brown out for the third time, but you knew that match was only going to be 5 minutes. That's just the way the WWE was. So you're like, oh, I'm not really interested in this match, but it's 5 minutes long, and then there'll be somebody else out that I might want to see or whatever. With AEW, it's a little different. They like to do longer matches. So if you're really not into the two guys that are in the ring, you're like, this is going to be 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes. And then you start to get bored and you say, okay, well, I'm not waiting another 20 minutes and sit through another 20-minute match that I'm not interested in to see this match. With the WWE, it was like fireworks. You were like, okay, I'll sit through Bad News for 5 minutes. All right, I'll sit through Demolition for 5 minutes. All right, I'll sit through this guy for another 5 minutes, because then we're going to see, like, you know, Bret Hart versus Razor Ramon or something. You wanted to see it. AEW doesn't have that. So if they want to offer a big event, if they want to say, you know, stick around and you're going to see CM Punk fight, oh, I don't know, John Moxley or something, people will stick. They'll sit through it. You don't have to televise that. But you're going to have to offer them something, because if they're sitting through 4.5 hours of wrestling and here comes another 18-minute match that they're not interested in, they're going to go home. And that's apparently exactly what happened. And it's not a good look for AEW. Now, as far as the ratings things are concerned, They've really gotten to a big war with Eric Bischoff, and it depends. You know, listen, I'm not a big Eric Bischoff fan, and I never was a very, very big Eric Bischoff fan, but he does have some points. He really does. And he's kind of just saying, look, don't make the same mistakes. We were going head-to-head with WWE, and the same mistakes you're making, I made, and going head-to-head, I lost. You're not even going head-to-head, and you're trying to make these mistakes. Don't do it. Just concentrate on your wrestling, which I tend to agree with. Now, the AEW's got a little bit of a situation, and the situation is fans are booing Cody Rhodes. And Cody Rhodes is insisting he doesn't want to turn heel. Maybe that in itself is his angle. You know, he really is a heel, but he considers himself not one. But this is stemming from the same thing that fans are always upset about, which is, oh, Cody, naturally he beat Aleister Black or Malachi Black. Naturally he beat him. Had to get the win back. He's the booker and he has to book himself to win. We don't like that. Well, you got to take the Booker thing out of the equation. You got to take it out of the equation. Let's just say Cody Rhodes had nothing to do with the booking. Let's just say Marcus Kane had to do the booking. If you think I'm not booking Cody Rhodes to win, you're insane. What's the point? What, Malachi Black is just going to tear through everybody? He's invincible, right? If you beat somebody that bad, they got to get the victory back at some point. Or they're worthless. Well, just make Cody Rhodes worthless? Cody Rhodes put over Malachi Black as hard as he possibly could when he debuted. He's going to get the victory back. That's the way it goes. Go through the wrestling history and tell me that doesn't happen all the time. It happens all the time. I've told this story before. I'll tell it again. That when The Rock was on the precipice of either being a bum, probably going to get canned by the WWE, or a top heel, he was told he was going to fight The Undertaker on television. And Vince McMahon told him, you're winning, but we don't tell The Undertaker how to lose. So you go talk to The Undertaker. He'll tell you how the match is going to go. So The Rock said, well, I'm just, you know, obviously it's probably going to be a DQ or count out or something. We'll see what happens. So he said, I went to him and said, I guess we're fighting and I'm supposed to go over. So what do you want to do? He said, The Undertaker took a look at me and said, you got a finisher? He said, yeah, I have a finisher, The Rock Bottom. But I mean, you know, he said, well, look, do you want to be a superstar or do you just want to be, you know, a mid-carder for the rest of your life? Because if you want to be a superstar, you're going to have to beat somebody big. And he said, no, of course I want to be, you know, a superstar. He said, okay, well, then you give me The Rock Bottom and that's it. And he said, I was stunned, really. And it was the biggest victory then of his life. And today it catapulted me to being one of the top heels. And I told The Undertaker at the time, if I'm still in this position, when you get back, because The Undertaker was leaving for a while, I can't wait to return the favor. I will obviously return the favor. And The Rock was red hot. The top heel in the business when The Undertaker came back. And he took the Tombstone Piledriver for the three count to give him the victory back. It happens all the time. So to say, well, naturally, Cody Rhodes is the booker. He booked himself to win. No, that's just the way a wrestling story goes. What are you supposed to do, lose again? And the story is what? I can't beat Malachi Black. I just suck. That's what you want the story to be. See, that's why I disagree sometimes with wrestling fans, because they talk too quickly and they don't really understand. You can't just bury yourself. What are you supposed to be? You're the booker and you're going to bury yourself completely? Now, if you want to tell me nobody in the ring should be the booker, okay, I'll go with that. But that's not what you were saying when AEW first started. You were saying what a genius Cody Rhodes was and how his booking was going to be phenomenal. And remember, all this other stuff that you think is so great, he's booking. So do you think it's fair that he books himself to just be a jabron? I don't. I don't at all. So I'm going to give Cody Rhodes a pass on that one, Todd. I mean, at some point, wrestling is infamous for this. You get your victory back in time.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said, about what you said about The Undertaker. So he took the finisher of the Rock's finisher, the Rock Bottom, to get the Rock over on that Monday Night Raw, whatever it was, because The Undertaker was taking time off for a while until he came back. He took the win back.
Yeah, it happens all the time, Mike. So for AEW fans to complain and say Cody is booking himself to be this or that or the other thing, Cody took the loss. He took the loss to Malakai Black. So I don't really understand what the problem is that he gets one back.
Right. I don't see what the problem is either. You know, I mean, how many times did Ric Flair when he was booking, or did Dusty Rhodes when he was booking, you know, take
right.
the loss? You know, they, I mean, look, you can make an argument that they shouldn't have been booking, you know, at the time, but they did the right thing. And look, and Dusty Rhodes is considered as a true legend in this business, you know. So, I mean, he's just Cody's just following his dad's example.
Yeah, and look, Cody Rhodes did not leave the WWE and form his own wrestling alliance because he wanted to be a jabron. That's why he left the WWE. He said, they're not booking me right. They're not making me anything big. I could, you know, start my own federation, which he did. So how in the world do you begrudge the guy the ability to book himself to be at least a reasonably top guy? Now, if he had the belt, the main belt, and absolutely would not let go of it, like Vern Gagne with the old AWA, I would say, yeah, that's pretty cheesy. You know, you're the promoter, you're the champion, nobody can beat you, you're the champion for life. That's a little much. That's not what he did. Cody Rhodes has lost plenty of times. I don't have any problem with the way Cody Rhodes is booking himself. As a matter of fact, I think he's booking himself reasonably mid-card compared to what some guys would do if they had the book. So I think fans are overreacting to that. What fans are not overreacting to, though, is Tony Khan going nuts with this nonsense. And I warned everybody. What did I say? I said Tony Khan wants to be a wrestling character, didn't I? And now there are strong rumors that Tony Khan wants to step into the ring, wants to do a wrestling match. I warned everyone. This is what ends up happening when you're basically a money mark. And that's what Tony Khan is. He's not a guy who said, look, I like wrestling. Yeah, wrestling's cool, but all I'm really looking for is, can I make big money? My interest in this is, can I make big money? See, a real businessman does that. If somebody came to me and said, hey, Marcus, what do you know about ladies' shoes? And I say, I know nothing about ladies' shoes. Absolutely nothing. I mean, I know what a nice pair of shoes look like. Okay, well, I have a company that we can make big, big money selling ladies' shoes. Okay. Okay, that's fine. I'm in if I can make big money. Well, that's the way it should be. But no, Tony Khan is a fan, a huge fan, and all his life, obviously, he wanted to be a wrestler or around wrestlers, and this is his way to do it. And now he's become the ultimate fanboy where he's like, and now I want to be a character, and I knew this was going to happen. Ted Turner didn't do this. And for the benefit of people say, well, Vince did. No, Vince didn't. For ages and ages and ages, Vince McMahon was just an announcer, and that's all he was. And it wasn't until basically he said, we can use this, and boy, did he use it to his advantage. That was the biggest times of the WWE. So his decision was correct. Tony Khan's is just, you know, he's doing the Billy Corgan. I want to be a character. Well, it's your federation. I guess you can go out there and beat Malakai Black if that's what you want to do. But, you know, fans aren't going to put up with it. So this is not a good decision. Tony Khan should stay the hell out of the ring. He had nothing to do with it. Just be the guy in the back. Just be the guy who does the press conferences. Just be the guy who issues the press releases. You're not a wrestler. You don't belong being a character in the ring. It's a bad mistake. And by the way, Tony Khan is 120 pounds soaking wet. Vince McMahon at the time was a pretty big dude. So it was a little bit reasonable that Vince McMahon, given the size of him and the muscularity and everything, could give somebody a hard time. Plus he had the power. Tony Khan, come on. I mean, let's be reasonable. So I hope that's not true, but from what I'm hearing, Mike, that is true, and that would be, I think, a disaster.
I think it would be a disaster as well. And think about this. Billy Corgan has seemed to have learned his lesson. You know, he has stepped back. He's back in the background, and you very rarely see him on TV with the NWA. And when he is on TV, it's a very special occasion in terms of announcing, you know, different things, including that women's pay-per-view, you know,
right.
But he had to do that because it was a big deal, right? He's learned his lesson. Look at Billy Corgan. You know, Billy Corgan is, what, 200 pounds, maybe 210, maybe. You could buy Billy Corgan getting in the ring. You could buy that because he's big enough. Like you said, Tony Khan is 150 pounds soaking wet. You're not going to buy him in the ring, you know, against, you know, hell, even against somebody like, you know, Cowboy there, you know. You're not going to buy that.
No, you're not going to buy it against anybody. You're not going to buy it against even Leo Rush. I mean, he's not big, but it's not going to work. Telling you right now, you start getting yourself involved in that crap, that's when the AEW is going to go downhill. So just stop it. Stop the ratings thing, too, by the way. You know, just issue your nice little press release saying, look, a lot of this was just in fun. A lot of this was just, you know, in character. We're going to stop this nonsense. You know, I wish the WWE plenty of luck. They obviously have better ratings than we do. We're attempting to, you know, match that, and we hope we can. And we're going to put the best product we can and hope for the best. That's it. Just put that all aside. And you'll be fine. If you start a war, and then on top of it, you try to inject yourself as a character, you're going to poison your own federation. And hopefully the wrestlers in the back are smart enough to tell him that. I don't know, because he's the guy with the money. He's the guy that signs the checks. So they might not have the guts to tell him that. Now, a guy like Jericho might, because he doesn't really care. Because tomorrow he could go back to Vince McMahon. Or just retire, or just do whatever he wants to do. But I don't know if any of the younger guys have the guts to tell them that. We'll find out. Anyway, let's move on to a developing situation, which the WWE, to a certain extent, held back. We're finding out more about this Charlotte Flair situation. And then we knew that she had words with Becky Lynch backstage. We knew that Becky had accused her of trying to make Becky's character look bad by dropping the belt on the ground and expecting her to pick it up. And we knew there were some heated words exchanged and that Becky had to go back out for a match and Charlotte was escorted from the building by security. Now that made it weird because no one in their right mind would have ever thought that Charlotte Flair would storm the ring even during a dark match and start any trouble with Becky Lynch. That wasn't going to happen. So why was she escorted out? Well, now we're starting to find out that Sonya Deville wanted to fight her. Sonya Deville was mad. And apparently it came very close to being an actual fight between her and Sonya Deville. And that's part of the reason. And now there are a lot of the female roster saying, I don't want to work with Charlotte Flair. And there's some of them who are behind the scenes saying this was Charlotte Flair hoping to get fired. This is Charlotte Flair hoping to get released from her contract. She doesn't want to be here. Now, I don't care how big your federation is, or I don't care what kind of a ratings war you're in. I don't care about any of that. If I owned AEW, if I owned WWE, if I owned any federation where a worker made it very clear to me, I no longer wish to be here at all. And if you do continue to hold on to me, I'm not going to do you any much good because I'm just not into it. I don't want to do it. Then I'm letting them go because they can only poison the pool. They cannot help me anymore. You've now reached a point where you can't help me anymore. You can only be a hindrance. I know they don't want to let Charlotte Flair go because she's going to go straight to AEW. That's going to solidify the women's division. I get it. But she's not going to help you if she's causing trouble like this backstage. She's not going to help you if she's not giving 100%. She's not going to help you if she really doesn't want to be there. Now, I'm going to tell you something that Paul Heyman did. And I thought this was actually genius. Paul Heyman had signed Sabu to do a match. It was a feature match in one of his events. And Sabu no-showed because he was getting bigger money to go to Japan. So Sabu took the money and said, no, I'm not going to be there. I'm going to Japan. They offered me more money. Paul Heyman came out and told the fans the exact truth. He said, I've had a great relationship with Sabu, and I'm sure he'll be working here again. But the truth of the matter is, he's not here tonight. And the reason he's not here tonight, he didn't want to be here. And he was offered more money to go somewhere else, and he went. So all you really have to do, if you wanted to fire Charlotte Flair, is just to come out and say, look, Charlotte Flair does not want to work here. Charlotte Flair is obviously not going to give her best performances here, which you deserve, as fans who pay your money to see us. Charlotte Flair has made the decision that she no longer wants to work for this company or wrestle for its fans. And for that reason, we're letting her go. That would poison her off so much more because people would say, well, I mean, if she'd pull that with Vince, she'll pull it with Tony Khan. What's the difference? If she don't like working there, if things don't go her way, is she going to, you know, piss in the pool? Is she going to not give 100%? Is she going to start trouble in the locker room? So here you go, folks. A little bit of honesty goes a long way. This is probably what Vince McMahon should do. I would set Charlotte down and tell her very clearly, look, we're not having any more of this. If you want to sit here and tell me you want to be a WWE superstar, then fine. You're going to give 100%. You're going to do what we ask you to do. If you do not want to be a WWE superstar anymore, if you truly just don't want to because of Andrade, because of your dad, because of our booking, because of any other reason, then go. We'll release you from your contract. Because why would we keep you here? What would be the reason? And then you go and issue that statement. If she says, yes, I'm going, then you go and issue that statement. You tell the fans exactly why she left. And I think that would make a big difference. It's time for a little more honesty in wrestling, Mike.
It really is. But the problem is I think Vince has, I mean, I don't want to speak out of turn here, but I think this is Vince's ego getting the better of him. I can talk Charlotte Flair down and keep her here when she doesn't want to be there. And it's obvious that she doesn't want to be there. It's obvious to everybody that's watching, the fans that go to the events, the fans that watch on TV, the fans that read the dirt sheets on the internet, the fans that read Pro Wrestling Illustrated, you know. It's obvious that she doesn't want to be there, but Vince is saying, well, it's his ego saying, I don't trust what I'm seeing. She really wants to be here. I don't trust the fans, what the fans are seeing. She really wants to be here. You know, I think what might very well happen is he might end up doing what he did. Again, I'll go back to what he did with Ted DiBiase. Ted DiBiase didn't want to be there, but he ended up paying Ted DiBiase not to wrestle. You know?
Yeah, and again, that's Vince's ego. You're right, but Vince has got to stop that. You know? I think Vince would get a lot of respect from fans if he just said, if you honestly don't want to work for this company, we're not handcuffing you. We don't want anybody here who actively says, I don't want to work for you. Why would we want an employee like that? Go into your job today and say, I really don't want to work for this company, and see how quick they say then leave. They don't want you there being counterproductive. So I think really, in all honesty, that's what should happen. I think Vince McMahon should have a talk with Charlotte Flair and either come to an agreement where you're going to do this, and we're doing this our way, and you're going to stick with the WWE and take this money or leave. And you know she's going to leave. She's going to leave anyway. See, this is the thing. Her contract has a couple of years on it. You want her floating around for a couple of years miserably unhappy? Rather than to bully her and say, we could make your life living hell for 2 years. We could make you lose to everybody. That's just going to make her madder. That's just going to make her try less. That's just going to be you underutilizing your talent. It doesn't make any sense to do that. It makes more sense to just let her go. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. Speaking of letting people go, Bray Wyatt's no-compete clause is up today. And for the people who were the conspiracy theorists who were saying, yeah, isn't it funny, the show before Halloween on SmackDown tonight, I bet you he shows up. He was still keeping that WWE logo on his Instagram account. Well, it's not there anymore. All references are gone. He was keeping that there because that gives you verification that you're the real person. And he's changed it to Wyndham Rotunda. No talk about Bray Wyatt, no talk about The Fiend, no nothing. So do not expect, unless this is the ultimate swerve, do not expect Bray Wyatt on tonight's SmackDown. Don't expect her on Impact either, because apparently they're saying, yeah, we did have talks and it did not work out. So apparently, you know, listen, here's why it didn't work out. Money. Bray Wyatt's not coming somewhere for pennies on the dollar he was making. But I also want to pat all of us on the back again, and I know I do this often, but I'm going to pat us on the back again. When we're right, we deserve some credit. Now all of the insiders are saying what we said from the very beginning. Bray Wyatt wasn't let go because of budget reasons. He was making 10 times more money than they paid him. That's what we said to begin with. We told you when this first was released, Bray Wyatt was not released for budget reasons. Why would you release somebody who's making you three times what you're giving them? That would be dumb. And now they're saying, yeah, that wasn't the reason. That's the reason they gave, but everybody knows that wasn't the reason. Yeah, including us, who knew it months ago, before the so-called experts have just came up with this. Now they're saying it was because Bray Wyatt was overprotective of his character. Overprotective of his character? This man lost more than he won. He was probably just saying, I'm not going to let you beat it into the ground again after you've already destroyed the Bray Wyatt character. Now you're going to destroy the Fiend character? No, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not coming up with a great idea, and then your idea is you lose to everybody. So he decided, I guess, I'm not playing ball. You tell me you want me to do this, that, or the other thing? I'm saying, no, I'm not doing it. All of this nonsense stemmed from a WrestleMania match where they didn't even let him get his victory back against Randy Orton, had Alexa Bliss turn against him for what? To what end? Alexa Bliss is going to come back without this gimmick. Bray Wyatt is gone. So explain to me what you got out of that finish, WWE. What did you get out of that finish? I'll tell you what you got out of that finish. You got Bray Wyatt out of the Federation, and you got Alexa Bliss probably coming back as her old character, which nobody's all that interested in. That's what you got. So congratulations to the booker who booked that, because that's just genius. That's just genius. Because Randy Orton couldn't have lost and then decided maybe I'll hook up with Matt Riddle for a while and do tag teaming because, you know, that whole thing with The Fiend had me shaking. No, he couldn't do that. It's just unreal. So now we know, Mike, now we know the truth, and that is the reason that Bray Wyatt was let go, as he was, what they say, being difficult to work with.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, look, if you're going to do that to his character, you did it to him twice, you know? You know, he came up with the cult leader, and then he came, basically, you almost did it to him three times because he had the Funhouse Bray Wyatt character, the sweater vest for Bray Wyatt, you know. You should have done something with him, which you didn't do. But again, and let me address this whole thing about with TNA not giving him what he wants and wanting to give him pennies on the dollar. You know, you see what he's done with selling merchandise, right? Give him what he wants, and he's going to more than pay for that. He's going to more than pay for that in the merchandise he's going to sell, because you know he's going to sell merchandise. So get off your ass, TNA, and pay the man.
You would think. I mean, TNA would have needed him worse than anybody else. They also did not sign Braun Strowman after some negotiation. Look, Derek in the chat room saying, how about Rampage? Well, listen, Tony Khan's going to make a move. There's no question he's going to try to get Bray Wyatt. There's no question in my mind. But then what are we going to get from him? Are we going to get – see, here's the deal with Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt's worth – how do I say this the right way? I'm a big Bray Wyatt fan, so what I'm about to say is no disparagement to Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt's worth as a professional wrestler is not 20-minute matches in the ring. It's not even 15-minute matches in the ring. Bray Wyatt's worth to that company is he can create these psychotic, quasi-horror movie characters that are really fascinating and sell merchandise because they're just plain cool. I don't know if that fits in with AEW, because that's not what AEW wants. This is the exact thing where you say, well, you know, Ricochet doesn't really fit in with the WWE because they want 4 or 5 minute matches, and Ricochet, you know, he needs 10, 12 minutes to give you what he can give you. That's why Ricochet's not successful. I don't know if Bray Wyatt would be successful over there because, you know, I don't know if they're going to want that kind of not really wrestling. It's more hype. Bray Wyatt's more of a hype man. He can wrestle. He can get a match done. But the idea behind it is more gimmick. Let's face it. The Fiend matches weren't anything special. He just beat on you. But the Fiend was selling merchandise out the door because it was such a cool character and it had such a cool backstory and it had such a cool persona. That's his worth to a company. Now, if he's just going to call himself Wyndham Rotunda and he's just going to get in the ring with normal wrestling gear, he's basically Husky Harris, and that didn't work. We've seen that Bray Wyatt. We've seen that straight up Bray Wyatt doesn't work. His worth is that creative quasi-horror movie character because he's real good at it. And if you're not going to exploit that, there's no point in having him. It would be the equivalent of saying we're signing Stone Cold Steve Austin to go back to being a Hollywood blonde. It's not going to work. People are going to want that other thing. The badass redneck ass kicker. That's what I want. In a speedo saying, yeah, my name's Wyndham Rotunda and I'm just a wrestler. They don't want that. Now that they've seen his creativity and the things he can do, that's what they want. And that's what he's going to have to give them. And I don't know if AEW is a good place to do that. I'm thinking no. People are saying, let him go with the Dark Order. No, the Dark Order is practically a comedy act. Do you really want that? Now, I'm going to go on record and tell you this, and people are going to say, oh, Marcus, you're crazy. The Fiend was probably one of the top 15 or 20 characters in the history of professional wrestling. You could have rode that puppy forever if you were smart. Forever. But you weren't smart. And you almost purposely sabotaged it, which means that somebody didn't like him or somebody said, whatever. There are some people and powers that be that either didn't get it, didn't like it, or whatever. But you had a gold mine. You had a gold mine twice. Because Bray Wyatt, the cult leader, you had a gold mine with, because you just squeeze every drop of juice out of that orange until the fans couldn't hate him no more. And he started to be like, well, you know, he's lost a few times now. He's not that hated anymore. He's not that feared anymore. And then you flip him face. to which he calls all of his fans his members of his cult. And you sell a ton of merchandise because everybody wants to be a member of the Bray Wyatt cult, right? So then you have all that merchandise for sale. So you blew that Bray Wyatt one to begin with. You had years and years and years and years of material there that you blew. But once you blew it, he came up with a Fiend. And all you had to do was let Sweater Vest Bray Wyatt wrestle for the most part, and the Fiend just occasionally, on those rare occasions, almost like Finn Balor's Demon, where just a certain couple of times the Fiend comes out, and that's a big deal. Nope. Let's let him get in a cage with Seth Rollins and lose. Let's let him lose to Goldberg. Let's let him lose to Randy Orton. Okay. Well, you sabotaged it then. You're the ones who destroyed it. You had two, arguably, best characters in the history of professional wrestling, and you couldn't do squat with them, Todd. Instead, they killed them.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, what were these characters? Some of them, they don't want nothing to do with it. They squash them and kill them off, and it's a terrible thing. It is.
Bray Wyatt is one of those rare people that if I were Vince McMahon or Tony Khan or anybody else who owned a wrestling federation, I would say, you have creative control. To a very large extent. Because you're one of the people who actually get it. I don't think Bray Wyatt's one of those guys like Hulk Hogan who says, I don't ever want to lose. I think Bray Wyatt is more one of those people who says, I'll lose when it makes sense for me to lose. I'll lose when we have got all the drama and all the intrigue and everything to the maximum level we can, and then it makes sense for me to lose because this is the moment. You know, this is the moment where I get what's coming to me. But we built it because I think he has that sense of drama. I think he understands that. He understands I can't go undefeated. But we got to make that loss special. We got to get every single drop of juice from that orange before that loss happens, so that loss means something. And he's right. So I would give him almost complete creative control, Mike, because I trust him with it.
I would give him complete creative control too, because think about this. What happened after the whole he's got the whole world in his hands thing? Several months after that, two things happened. One, you had them floating a thing with a commercial with, I believe it was Snickers or something, commercial with Bray Wyatt and the rest of the Wyatt family in that commercial floating, oh, we're going to turn him fake. And then shortly after that, you had that whole incident when the Wyatt family and the Shield was on the same side, then eventually they faced off, and there was a anticipation there that was going to come to blows.
Mike,
you know?
Of course. Listen, the bottom line was that's when the authority was running wild. What did Vince McMahon do? Vince McMahon was running wild as an authority figure. No one could come up against him, and when they did, he shot him down. All these squeaky, clean baby faces. Trying to follow the rules, saying, well, what can I do? He's the boss. But he runs up against a guy and says, I don't really care if you're the boss. I'm not a squeaky, clean, good guy. I'm not one of these people who follow the rules. Well, you could have took that same formula. You have Triple H and his whole authority, and everybody's following the rules because they're afraid of being fired. They're afraid of whatever. And you got the Wyatt family literally saying, we don't give one damn. And if you've got the Shield as your, protection organization, they don't give a damn about them either. They were the perfect anti-heroes. They were the perfect people to say, this makes 100% sense that they wouldn't listen to anybody but Bray. Of course they're not going to listen to anybody but Bray. He's their leader. And of course Bray Wyatt's not going to take orders from Triple H. He's not going to take orders from anybody because he's a megalomaniac who thinks he's a god. And, by virtue of default, they're the heroes because Triple H and his gang are running roughshod, and they finally come up against people who are probably worse than they are. That's what Vince McMahon and Steve Austin was. Vince McMahon was this power mad, I can do whatever I want guy, and Steve Austin was this redneck hillbilly beer drinking guy who said, I don't give one damn about you. And that's why it worked. They had it again, Mike, and what did they do? They just let it slip right through their fingers.
They had it again. And can you imagine? I mean, it wasn't Vince's fault that didn't work. It was Triple H's fault for not wanting to show ass.
Yep, that's right.
That's what he would have had to do. You get a group of guys saying, we don't give a goddamn about what you want, what you feel like, and them coming out maybe beating up Seth Rollins and the Shield, maybe even at some point getting their hands on Triple H and doing something to Triple H, because you know what would have happened. Eventually you would have had him not only get their hands on Triple H, but eventually J&J Security were there.
Yep.
And eventually you could have absolutely found a way to have him do something, have them to do something with Stephanie, because Stephanie was a big part of that as well, you know?
Of course. Again, all you had to do was have Triple H be this super confident, I don't give a damn about anybody, I'm the boss, and Stephanie McMahon the same way. But you're right, they had to show ass, because the characters of the Wyatt family, Triple H had to be afraid of them. Triple H had to be like Vince McMahon with Steve Austin, where Triple H is saying that they're psychopathic. All right? Fire him's not going to help. Threaten him's not going to help. Beating him up's probably not going to help. I don't know what the hell's going to help. They're stark staring nuts, all of them. I don't know what they're going to do next. We need security. We need bodyguards. We need people to keep them out of the building because they're nuts. And he has to come to this realization through showing some ass where he says, look, they're legitimately nuts. And I don't want to deal with them. But that would require, like, Vince McMahon, who was always able to show ass completely, and that's what was great about him. One week he'd be supreme confident, next minute he'd be crying in the ring. That's what made the fans keep coming back, is that Vince McMahon knew, I have to sell this guy. Triple H don't want to sell nobody like that. I'm not afraid of anybody. Okay, well then, I don't know what to tell you, because you're supposed to be afraid of the Wyatts. That's the whole point. So they didn't want to do that. They didn't want to make The Fiend anything major. So I don't understand. When you're seeing someone, I've said this a million times, when you see someone sell that much merchandise, that is a signal to you that you have to use that person, and you have to use them well. You don't start making them lose matches or undermine their abilities or do anything else. You keep pushing, because they're going to keep selling that merch. But it's just one more example of WWE shooting themselves in the foot. Now, can they rebound in Rampage? You know, maybe. Maybe Bray Wyatt can do something in Rampage, but I don't like the way it's getting so far, because I got news. Wyndham Rotunda clearly sounds like paying homage to not only just his family name, but the Wyndham's family name and old school wrestling. And if he's going to go back to that and not do any kind of creative horror film, weird, quirky stuff, fans are going to be disappointed, because that is Bray Wyatt's worth. That would be like The Undertaker saying, I'm just going to go back to being mean Mark Callis. People be like, yeah, I'm not really that interested. So what are we going to see tonight on SmackDown? Well, I don't know. I guess we're seeing the new roster unfold a little bit. So we'll see how things play out. The only other thing to report is that Rey Mysterio says he no longer wants to do any gimmick by which he fights his son in the ring. So I guess that's out. I guess that's not happening. Much to my surprise, he said he's not interested in doing that sort of an angle, that he thinks it would be counterproductive and doesn't want to do it. And he's also saying that his daughter is considering a career in professional wrestling. So we will see what happens tonight on SmackDown. We'll be back here on Sunday to talk about it. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.